Sunday after a nice slow pitch softball split. Welcome to Steel and Naz, Matt's Music Radio's Pioneer Sports Podcast here. Boys, what's going on?
Greg Bizarre is a legend.
That was
great guy.
We've had just so far.
I almost went deep in softball today. No big deal.
Didn't.
Warning track power, that's something. That's something.
Literally.
So what Anton's trying to explain here is, we had our really special guest today, longtime sports columnist, founder of the Boston Sports Journal. I mean, has written for the Boston Globe, just one of many publications out there. Greg Bedard, I went really well. We talked about his up-and-coming in the sports journalism world. We got to the Gronk hot takes, right, Steele?
Oh, yeah. Had to get there. Got to ask him.
Yeah. I mean, we got down to the Tom Brady signing, Cam Newton coming to the Patriots, what you really expect out of these rookies this year, and just overall how the Patriots are going to do. And I was really blown away. I mean, obviously, we joined in there when we could, but he gave some top-notch analysis. I mean, you see him on 98.5 all the time, and, really impressive stuff.
I didn't even touch a question. There was no need for Magic Mike to get involved with Greg Bedard. But Greg Bedard, oh boy, was he a treat.
He was truly – he's like one person. Like, I was just like, wow. Like, this guy, like – it doesn't touch when 98.5 hits or public radio hits, but when they get behind a podcast and they just kind of almost open the curtains, he showed how much he knows, and that's why he comes on those shows.
Oh, yeah, wild stuff.
Here it is, the founder of the Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard. Okay, we're here now with longtime sports columnist, the founder of the Boston Sports Journal, Greg Bedard. Doug, what's going on, Greg? How are we doing tonight?
Good. You know, a lot going on tonight with the PGA, the Celtics finishing up. It's nice that it's a busy sports weekend for a change.
Oh, yeah, we just finished up a slow pitch softball doubleheader. I'm pretty toast right now.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. So I'll just get right down to it. Like, obviously, I just mentioned before this going on, we have athletes and columnists on the show really describe their story. So when you first stepped into the sports media game, kind of how different was it, and how were you really motivated to get in such a competitive field?
You mean just from the very beginning?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I went to Rutgers. I was a pretty good baseball prospect at a Lincoln Sudbury. I went to Rutgers as a recruited walk-on. And, I did that for a couple of years. I actually ended up making the varsity going into my after fall ball my sophomore year. But I went and played flag football with the guys from the dorm. They invited me, and I said, yeah, sure, why not? And I dove for a guy's flag. I got my finger caught in his belt loop and needed pretty serious tendon surgery, and I was going to be on the shelf for at least a year. And I had already been hurt my freshman year, and I was like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. I mean, at best, I could be a good college baseball player, maybe play a couple years in the minors, but I wasn't going to the majors or anything. I wasn't, you know, a top prospect. And you know, the newspapers and sports in general had always been a huge part of my life. I mean, I grew up reading the Boston Globe every day. In fact, when I moved from, because I was born in Springfield, my family's from Athol, but we moved down to Boca Raton for 10 years when I was a kid.
Oh, really? Nice.
For my dad's job.
Nice.
And then when we moved back to Sudbury, it was sophomore year of high school, and I didn't know anybody. So like, I pretty much, for the first month of school, I would just go into the library and read the sports section of the Boston Globe because I didn't really know anybody, and I was just trying to, you know, fit in. I loved reading the Boston Globe. I loved reading Will McDonough and Peter Gammons and Bob Ryan and Shaughnessy and all those guys.
Cream of the crop, yep.
Yeah, and that always stuck with me. Even when I went to Rutgers as a student, I used to get the Globe delivered to me at Rutgers in my student mailbox. And when I was sort of questioning whether to continue playing baseball or not, they had a really good student newspaper there. I always thought about writing for it. And once I couldn't play that year for baseball, I walked in and took my first assignment, and I fell in love with it from the beginning. And then you know, after that, it's just, you know, a bunch of luck and opportunities and cashing in on those opportunities. And, you know, it was a great, at that point, it was a great time to enter into newspapers, into sports journalism. I wouldn't say it's the same now, you know, but I've loved every day that I've been able to do this, and I hope I can do this for the rest of my career, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, and coming from a Lincoln Sudbury, I mean, that's a great baseball program. I used to cover them over at the Metro West Daily News, so they've been booming for a long time now.
Yep.
And a side question as well, is this Rutgers tie, does that tie into Belichick and his love for the Rutgers?
not really, but I have joked about it. He and I joke about it from time to time, also with Steve Belichick, who went to Rutgers. I remember there was one draft one year when he drafted a bunch of Rutgers guys. And, you know, I'm always – all of us on the beat, we're all trying to look to, you know, make Belichick laugh and have a little bit of fun at times. So I remember at one point they had drafted like two or three Rutgers guys up to that point. And I remember putting out on Twitter, I said, if he drafts one more Rutgers guy, I'm going to have a surprise for Belichick. And so he drafted, I think it was like Steve Beauharnais or somebody. Oh, wow. Somebody really late in the draft one year.
That was unreal.
And so I brought my Brian Leonard Rutgers jersey with me just in case. And so when it came to the post-draft press conference, I put it on. I was wearing it. And what happens is this is when they used to have the press conferences in the blue level press in the stadium. And so what happens is once Belichick starts to enter, everybody goes up there, puts their recorder up there. Well, I waited until the very last, like I was the last person to go up and do it on purpose. And I put my recorder down, and Belichick kind of looks at me and kind of snorts for a second. And he's like, what's that all about? And I said, well, you know, I thought it might increase my chances of you drafting me this year. And he was just like snorted, and he just said, I don't know about that. And just gave a little grin. But, yeah, so we have fun with it from time to time, that's okay. For sure.
That's a win. That's definitely a win.
And is Bill, like you say, you know, you joke around with Bill from time to time. Like, clearly you're in an inner circle. You're someone me growing up listening to, you know, 98.5, you know, and just hearing and reading and everything you kind of come out with. I do look up to you the same way you would say you would look up to a Gammons or, any of them. How do you joke around with Bill Belichick?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's odd. I mean, it's. You know, I'm the type of guy who. You know, I try not to worry about what people say about me, or what they think. All I try to do is, I try to do the best job that I can, and you know, whether people like that or not, I can't really control that. All I can do is I work my ass off. I put in the work, and I think if you put in the work, then the results will speak for themselves. And I remember when I first came to the Globe in 2010 from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and, you know, I just sort of, I mean, we were living out of a hotel for like a month and then moving in. I mean, we had, let's see, our twins were, at that point, they were about 4.5 years old. I mean, we're just trying to keep our head above water at that point. And, like, you know, I just kept my head down and did my analysis. And then it was the next year, the full year, is when I started sort of doing the day or two after analysis for the Globe. It was something that I learned from Bob McGinn at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I knew it would go over well here if I did it right, because the Patriots are the type of team that they say nothing when they win, and they say even less than when they lose.
Yep.
And so, you know, fans, the essential question that you're trying to answer for fans, and if you can do that, then you're gonna have value to them as someone they want to read is, you know, they want to know, you know, why something happened. Why did the Patriots play well that day? Why did they stink? Why did Tom Brady only complete 50? If you could answer those questions, and look, I'm not a football expert. Like, I'll never pretend to be. I do try to, you know, over the course of my career, I've talked with a lot of people and watched film with a lot of people and asked a lot of people different questions, from players to coaches to front office to ex-players. You name it, just in a quest for more knowledge that I could pass on to my readers. And you know, I didn't I didn't really ask anybody with the Patriots what they thought of what I did. I know that Belichick reads us every day. He gets on the treadmill and reads everything that everybody writes.
That's crazy.
And
that's
I just know that, you know, without going into detail, is that, you know, and I'm sure it runs hot and cold at times. I'm sure there are times that he hates me and you know, and MFs me and things like that. But I do know, yeah. I do know that Bill and at least some of the coaches on the Patriots staff and people in the front office respect the job that I do. They respect the work that I put in, and they respect how I respect the game. And so, you know, once you know you have there's at least some sort of mutual respect with Bill, things get a little bit easier. They get a little lighter, and you know, I've enjoyed a pretty good relationship with him ever since I've been covering the team. So it's certainly helped.
Not to ruin a relationship, but why did Malcolm Butler not play in that Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, there are rumors. there are rumors about Malcolm Butler and maybe, you know, somebody's wife and things like that. Oh, yeah. I don't believe that. I mean, and if people read me and heard me during the year, I mean, I remember, you know, because that whole offseason we figured, okay, well, Malcolm Butler's going to get the contract extension. You know, he's born and bred, and, you know, he'll give him a little hometown discount, stuff like that. And then nothing happened. And then all of a sudden they signed Stephon Gilmore. And I remember being out there for the first training camp practice, and I was like, Malcolm Butler looks like he looks like he doesn't want to be here. And I remember taking a lot of heat for that from other media members, some people who said I was doing it to sell my new website and things like that. I mean, I hope that people who have followed me, I mean, it's now been a decade that I've been in Boston and covering this team in some sort of fashion, know that, you know, I just don't say things to say things. I mean, I'm too old. I don't have enough time. I got twin 13-year-olds. You know, I got a wife who wants to spend time with me. Like, I don't have time to make up crap. If, you know, if I wanted to be Skip Bayless, like, I would have tried that a long time ago. And trust me, if you looked at my bank account, you could see that I'm not Skip Bayless. So, you know, I just, all I can do is, I've just tried to tell it like it is, and what I believe and what I've noticed from covering different teams and different players over the year. And to me, Malcolm Butler looked like a very unhappy person in that training camp. And guess what? He was unhappy throughout the year.
Absolutely.
He played like crap many times during that year. And even that month of December, I wrote a column, and I think I talked about it on Felger and Mass, where I said, Malcolm Butler deserves to be benched right now. I said, like, you could make the case, because he was freelancing. You could tell that he wanted to make the big plays because he was now going to be a free agent.
Yeah,
and he's like,
yeah,
and I'm going to go get mine. Screw the defense. Screw the integrity of the defense. I'm going to go get mine so I get paid. Screw Belichick. That was basically the way he was playing. And so when it came time for the Super Bowl and looking at the Eagles, like, they, you know, and how they do read option, and there's a bunch of deceptive plays. Like, you could totally see a play in the Super Bowl if Malcolm Butler was out there where they were going to run play action. He bit on it, got beat over the top. It happened during the season. And I think Bill, going into that week, said that's a liability for us. They probably demoted him to number three, and that, again, would affect his pocketbook, because all of a sudden now he's going into free agency where people are like, well, why'd this guy get demoted and only play 25 snaps in the Super Bowl? What's going on? And so he threw a hissy fit, probably, you know, lashed out at a couple coaches, and Belichick thought that he wasn't going to be in the right mindset. So he said, you know what, you're sitting. So, I mean, that's what I choose to believe. I don't know if that's true or not.
I will say, though.
It's been awful since then.
So you said, you don't just put out crap to put out crap. But when you put out something that, I don't know, a lot of people don't agree with, and, like, it could happen, and then it ends up happening, are you kind of just – is there some type of satisfaction that it's like, I proved all you guys wrong?
I mean, for sure. I mean, like, I mean, you could just take this week. I mean, I wrote that at when – when Cam Newton wins the starting job for the Patriots, and he's the quarterback of the Patriots, I think that the team should do right by him and not give him a ton of money. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, guaranteeing, like, his incentives and maybe adding a couple extra, like, or giving him like a bonus to where it's, he's making $6 million in base salary, and then he could reach $10 million if he makes those incentives, like something like that. Because, you know, there are far-reaching effects in the locker room when you give Cam Newton a contract like that, including, and I was the first to point this out. Many other people, like Mike Lombardi and other people, have also pointed it out. Is that the Patriots have basically hamstrung themselves? That they gave Cam Newton they guaranteed his $500,000 of his salary. I mean, if they want to go out and sign anybody, whether it's now or at the trade deadline, they want to trade for somebody, how are they going to do that when they told Cam Newton they didn't have any money? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, so a lot of people took that negatively. That's fine. I mean, I don't really care, but I think the Patriots are going to do that if he's healthy, he wins the starting job. I think that Bill Belichick will, at some point in time, likely right before the season, do something to his contract. And yes, I am looking forward to that point in time.
Sense of confidence, I think, too, to Cam Newton, saying, "You're our guy. We're going to put all our faith in you, all our chips and money."
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's our guy.
Well, also a question kind of here is with all these Patriots opting out, it supposedly it's clearing this money. Don't they have about like $28 million in cap space? Are they planning on doing things? You know, Clowney's out there. There's a lot of those, you know, defensive linemen, the linebackers out there. Are they gonna change their core? I know they spent a couple of draft picks on linebackers and whatnot. Does that have to do with anything, or is it just kind of Cam's our guy, and now we're gonna change our opinion here?
Well, I mean, that they now have cap space certainly factors into the Cam contract scenario, because I mean, when they signed him, they had none, and then like the next day, miraculously, they settled two grievances. Yeah. You know, and now they have $35 million in cap space. And you know, I think they're going to do anything big with that cap space? No. I think you know, when we look at next season, and because of COVID and the lack of fans in the stadium, we have no idea where the cap's going to be. It's at least going to be, the floor is $175 million. This year was almost $200 million. So every cent that you can roll over in the next year, especially for a team like the Patriots that is right now like third or fourth in the league in cap space for next year. Yep. I mean, it's worth its weight in gold next year, because other teams are going to be screwed. There's going to be good players that are going to have to be released, and they're going to be flooding the market. And if you're flush with cap space, like the Patriots will be, if they roll over most of that money, then now you're set up for Dynasty 3.0. You know, really, if you get this offseason right.
Show goes on.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yep.
We have to bring up the topic here. So Tom Brady obviously going down to Tampa. Rob Gronkowski like joining him. What's your take on, you know, starting in March there, where he told New England faithful that he's leaving, and then signed with Tampa. What's your whole opinion on that?
Well, I mean, I think that from the team's perspective, I think that Tom was plan A at quarterback. I think they thought, you know, they gauged the market, and they realized at the end of the day, he's really only going to have the Buccaneers and the Chargers or somebody like that. And is Tom Brady really going to go sign with the Buccaneers and Bruce Arians? And, you know, I mean, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for crying out loud.
I think
the Patriots thought he won't do it. Yeah. I mean, they thought that at the end of the day, he would realize what he had there, that it was very easy for him, that he knows the offense, that he has McDaniels, all this stuff. It was all very comfortable. And, you know, but you can't – he signed out of spite. And, you know, I give him credit for that, you know, a little bit. I mean, I think he's being short-sighted. I think this is going to be a lot harder than he thinks it is. I think that it's a bad fit in terms of offense with Bruce Arians, who almost every year gets his quarterback killed because he loves deep drops and hanging on to the ball and throwing deep. And yeah, I'm sure he's going to do a lot of what Brady wants to do, but he also runs a very loose ship and the complete opposite than New England. And the tight ship is part of the reason why the Patriots were more successful than everybody else on an annual basis. And, you know, I also think it's very difficult. People, you know, underrate this every year, especially, I think the best move in free agency is not to do anything in free agency, except, yeah, because it's hard. It's hard to bring new people into your organization. And just look at Peyton Manning. I mean, you don't go into a much better situation than Peyton Manning did with the Broncos. He had Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas and tight ends and running game, a defense. And he didn't win a Super Bowl until year three. He didn't go to one until year two, and that's only because the Patriots, where half the team was injured.
He didn't win the Super Bowl. Von Miller won.
They had Brock,
Exactly, Von Miller,
But at the same time, though, I mean, they bring in Trent Williams via free agency, you know? He makes a huge impact and then goes in, you know, whatever. Belichick says F off and now he's nothing. I feel like free agency makes an impact to a purpose of where, you know, you have to fill a need if you find the right guy at a cheap discount and he's, you know, an all-pro left tackle out of nowhere. Do you not agree with that or just, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way the Patriots use it. You know, very rarely, you know, Stephon Gilmore, Adelius Thomas, that's been basically the only times they've dove into that market with a big, big money guy. I mean, Trent Brown was basically a throwaway in the 49ers, in a trade with the 49ers. I mean, they had just drafted a kid in the first round. They wanted to get rid of him. He was an attitude problem. He was hurt. So he really cost them nothing. I mean, that's, you know, that's the way to do it. And I'm all for, you know, throwing, you know, cheap assets at plugging holes and seeing which one floats. And that's one of the big things I respect about Belichick and the way he does business, or in terms of, you know, who plays where, is you're going to earn it on the field. If you're not the best in practice, you ain't playing. So nobody's there on scholarship with the Patriots, and I respect that a lot.
So on the Brady talk, I mean, he goes into the NFC South there with the New Orleans Saints. Carolina's not going to be good this year, and I mean, Atlanta is a flip of the coin once every 4 years. Do you think they stand packed against the New Orleans Saints? Or do you think the wild card frenzy for them?
Yeah, I think it's most likely the wild card. I mean, I'm a guy who, you know, I'm annually very high on the Saints, and I'm sort of sick of being high on the Saints because they find a way to choke all the time.
It's crazy.
And so, I mean, but there's no question that they are the stronger team. I mean, I think the Bucs will be fine, but when you add that many pieces in the offseason, and by the way, I think Gronk is toast. He was toast when he was here. And I can tell you people with the Patriots think that they thought he was done the year that he retired in New England. He was not a very good practice player. He couldn't get off press coverage. I mean, yes, he did come up with big catches to help them win a Super Bowl, but that's about all he had left at that point in time. And now he's, you know, a year removed from football. But I think the Saints are the best team. The Bucs are fine. They'll probably be a better second half of the season team than they are in the first. But, you know, there's no question that Brady, a motivated Brady, is going to really, you know, elevate them. It's just, you know, can he stay healthy and sustain through, you know, 16-plus games at his age?
Greg, what's like Gronk? I think Gronk, he might bounce back a little bit. Do you have to get ready every year around draft day that the Gronk tweet is going to come back on Twitter?
Pretty much, or whenever Gronk has a great game. I mean, I was like, okay, good, Gronk's retired. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm done seeing the tweet on an annual basis. But, you know, I mean, what's hilarious is that most people who retweet that, they think that, A, I was covering the Patriots at the time. I wasn't. I was covering the Packers. B, that it was after the Patriots selected them. No, it was before the draft. And really, it was a tweet that was generated like Gronk was being talked up at the time as a potential that he might go in the first round. And me, I didn't watch any film on him. I was just going on his background and scouting reports from guys that I talked to. And, I mean, you're talking about a guy who his final year in college, he didn't even play because of his back.
Yeah, he obviously wasn't the guy in college that he was in the pros.
No. I mean, and sure, he was a good prospect. Yeah. But, like, basically my quote was about, like when I said people are high on Gronkowski, meaning people think he's, like, first-round material, that's a complete joke. And, I mean, he did go in the second round, which is where he should have gone. But mostly that tweet, yeah, so many years ago, that most of it was about reacting, just sort of throwing water on, I think it was Pro Football Talk, you know, who was a very pro Drew Rosenhaus outfit.
Yeah.
He basically pumps up all Drew Rosenhaus's people, for, and there are different reasons for that. And sort of that tweet was throwing water on Gronkowski possibly going in the third round, because it was just insane. For a guy who declared early after not even playing the year before, there was no way he was going in the first round. And so that's really what the tweet was about, but fine, bring it on. People can bring it up every year. It's fine, whatever. I just
get the backstory out there.
I mean, most of the time I ignore it, but if you're just being a complete a-hole about it, like, then you're going to get muted, so then I don't have to hear about it again. But, it is what it is.
Well, so now we have redemption here. And we just drafted two tight ends. Just, you know, who's better? I hear we got, you know, the Rambo and Don Keen, who's a crazy person. And then a more talented, less killerish version of Aaron Hernandez and Devin Asai. Who do you see?
That should be on the billboard at Patriot Place.
Tweet that up for us.
I mean, what do you project out of them? And, you know, I know there's a few tight ends on the roster. And how does the offense look, you know, in your opinion, with the receivers?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think the big thing for the whole offense is, I remember about a week before they got Cam Newton, I was talking with a Patriots source, and we were sort of talking about the prospects for the season, and he was like, look, we couldn't get off man coverage last year. We couldn't convert third downs. We couldn't score in the red zone. Like, this is before Cam Newton and all the opt-outs went down. It was like, and this person said, like, how have we gotten any better? Like, really? I mean, we have a couple rookie tight ends. When do rookies ever do anything here? Hernandez hit a little bit early his rookie year. Gronk really wasn't until the very tail end of his rookie year. It was mostly his second year. And Algie Crumpler played a lot more than Gronk did that year. And, you know, it's the same running backs. Yeah, you know, you hope to be a little bit better on the offensive line, but, you know, what if Marcus Cannon just is done? What if he's past his prime? What if Shaq Mason has some chronic injury?
Right.
You know, teams are still going to double team Julian Edelman. They got Demir Byrd, so there's a little bit of speed out there, but is N'Keal Harry, you know, blown by anybody? No. And it's like,
what about Marquise Lee?
Could have Jeff Thomas on the banner as well.
Yeah, I mean, Marquise Lee, I mean, who knows? I mean, the guy almost, like, basically lost his leg the last time he was on a football field. How are they going to be any better?
Think Mohamed Sanu is going to be any healthier?
I think the people, like the national people who, you know, don't really pay attention when they talk about, you know, how the Patriots are going to suck on offense, you know, they really discount that they had nothing at tight end. Julian Edelman, his shoulder and his leg were basically on strings by the end of the year.
Yeah,
Mohamed Sanu's ankle was terrible. Yeah. Like, so those guys are all going to be healthy. They're all going to be better. But the big thing with the offense now with Cam here, and I remember a Patriots person told me this, is like the person who should be happiest about Cam Newton being here is Julian Edelman. And because he can't be doubled anymore. It's you have to pick and choose now. So just by adding Cam Newton, just putting him on the field, creates more space for these guys to get open, and the Patriots need as much space as they can find.
Because if you double him, you let Cam go. Exactly.
Yep.
Right? Yep.
I have an inside source that you don't even have, because I don't want to give him up, but he worked as a bodyguard for a certain player, and he said last season that Edelman, his ribs were so bruised by week 8 that, like, he couldn't even believe he was playing. Like,
oh, I believe it. I thought that all last year too. I mean, I was amazed. I mean, Julian is one of the toughest players I've ever covered, you know, and I've covered a lot of players in this league. And, you know, what he was able to do last year, you know, answering the bell between his shoulder and also his ribs. I mean, it was just, it was incredible. I mean, I was surprised he could, and you could see it on the field. Like, he could barely do anything, but that's all the Patriots had, and he had to be out there, and I didn't mind it. I mean, people criticize him for dropping that ball against the Titans, but, you know, who knows how hurt he was by that point.
Yeah, Wes Welker dropped it against the Broncos, so fuck it.
Pretty much, yeah.
So all these guys opting out, so Dont'a Hightower, Marcus Cannon, Patrick Chung. Obviously, I think that's like the top three there. Are there any guys you're looking at that are like that they're going to make a big impact of not being there?
Guys that the opt-outs. I mean, you know, I think Vitaly's a sneaky sort of big one, even though, you know, some people say he could have been cut, and he could have been.
Yep.
But the thing is if you look what the Patriots did as far as, okay, so James Devlin retired. They had a Dan Vitale, and they drafted Dalton Keene.
Yep.
You know, they were obviously trying to move in a more athletic direction at fullback, and that's significant. If you look at what the sort of Kyle Shanahan tree of coaches, not so much the guy with the Rams, Sean McVay, but LaFleur in Green Bay, they drafted an athletic tight end, fullback, H-back guy, DeGora out of Cincinnati, who I know the Patriots really, really, really liked. And they may wanted he may have been at the top of their board at the position. You know, Vitale's extremely athletic. You look at what, you know, Kyle Shanahan's done with Youssef in San Francisco. Green Bay now has a guy like that. The Ravens always they've had traditionally an athletic tight end. And the reason for that is the more you can put the football fullback on the field and you have, you know, 21 or 22 personnel, the opposing defense is going to match that up with base defense. So base defenses are a lot less complicated. Like when a defense puts together its game plan, almost all of its pressures, coverage disguises, things like that are all in sub package, because that's when you think you're going to have the biggest plays, third downs. Right. So if you want to have a simplified offense, whether it's Jared Stidham or Cam Newton, the best way to do that is to go against base defense as much as possible, and having a fullback on the field allows you to do that. And if he's athletic, it's an even bigger benefit.
That's a plus.
Because then he can slip out and catch passes and be a real weapon in the passing offense. And I think that's what the Patriots are aiming at. With Vitale, I know they could do certain things. With Keene, Jakob Johnson is fine as a sledgehammer.
Absolutely.
But really, Keene's the only guy who could do what Vitale does. Can they find another guy maybe to supplement that? I don't know. I doubt it. I just think it would have been easier for Josh McDaniels to do that on offense if he had Vitale and Keene on this team, and now he only has one of them.
Can I get on quote that Greg Bedard said the Patriots might run the triple option this year?
They might do a lot of different things this year. I mean, yeah. They got to figure out a way to move the ball somehow.
I mean, yeah.
I think it's going to be real fun.
Out of the running back situation, it looks like he's got that girly degenerative knee disease, whatever it is.
Did you say girly?
Girly.
Oh, Todd Gurley.
But I'm saying, I'm saying compared to Sony Michelle, it's hurting way worse. Obviously, he looked like a shell of himself.
Yeah.
We have Damian Harris. You know, you have White.
Who hasn't even got an opportunity, really.
Yeah, he hasn't gotten an opportunity. Bama guy.
What do you kind of project out of the running back position in... I'm just curious for fantasy reasons.
Yeah, I think it's one of those spots where it's going to be an intense training camp battle. I think obviously Sony's the incumbent, and he's fine. I mean, I wouldn't have drafted him in the first round, but he's fine, and he gets what's blocked, and that's really what you want out of a running back. When they have good blocking, he runs well. When they have crappy blocking, he doesn't run well. It's it's not rocket science. Harris. You know, the popular line last year, especially from Ivan Fears, the running backs coach, which was, that Harris basically, he didn't get a chance because all those guys stayed healthy in front of him. I mean, I believe that to a point. I also believe if Damian Harris knew exactly what was going on as far as the playbook and that he was very talented, you find a way to get those guys on the field. You just do. And so... I have my questions about whether he is he has a role on this team. You know, I think what I expect to happen in training camp, I think Harris will be given some opportunities to pop. If he does, I think basically the loser between Sony Michel and Damian Harris might get traded. I mean, because I don't see the reason for both of them. I think that Harris is, you know, he could, like, look, the Patriots have not been, you know, afraid of trading recent draft picks, you know, not too long. Duke Dawson and, you know, they've had a couple of other guys in recent years that they've traded when they haven't panned out. And I think that if Harris doesn't show that he's an NFL player, I think he's gone. I think there's an outside chance that Harris pops, Sony, you know, who's already on PUP, that we don't know when he's going to be ready. I assume he's going to be ready by the time practice is open on about August 17th. If he doesn't pop and he looks ordinary and Harris looks better, why is Sony Michel here? So, you know, I don't know. I think things could get interesting at running back.
But you think I'm thinking Damian Harris, like he's not really have any trade value if he's not the guy, correct?
Correct. I mean, you're looking at, you know, sort of like a you know, like a Duke Dawson, you know, bunch of used footballs type of trade, you know, at cut down.
Nice little bag or something.
Let me ask you. So when it came to draft night this year, when Lenore Ryan, I believe that's the name of the college, came up,
yeah.
Kyle Duggar came across the screen. What was your first take?
My first take was, I wonder if Patrick Chung is retiring. Because, I mean, he's basically, you know, he's a younger, taller, more athletic version of Patrick Chung.
He's a skilled back.
And I just didn't understand if Chung was here, then what's the point? When is he going to play? I mean, Daron Harmon is gone, but you sign Adrian Phillips.
Yeah.
So you have Adrian Phillips, Patrick Chung, and Devin McCourty.
Yep.
When is Duggar going to play? And, like, this team needs help now at certain places, and you can get a safety out of a Division II school next year or later in the draft. And so that was my first question, was what's the deal with Patrick Chung? Now, in hindsight, we know that Chung did have some thoughts about retirement this offseason. Maybe Belichick knew Chung was the type of guy who might opt out during the pandemic. And so maybe he said, you know what, we're going to get that guy. I'd rather get that guy 1 year early than 1 year late. And, like, right now it looks smart. I still don't know how much he sees the field. I think he's more of a matchup guy. Use him in the box against the Ravens or somebody like that.
Probably the past 20 years, not really a lot of rookies besides, like you said, Aaron Hernandez or even the backside of the season for Rob Gronkowski has really made an impact. Do you think this could be like a first year in a long time that, I mean, they're going to need guys to step up, right?
Well, I mean, I expect the Patriots to add a few veterans spot. I expect them to add a veteran tackle, like an Adrian Waddle, bring him back.
What about the Green Bay tackle? Daniels, isn't he out there?
Mike Daniels, I think I just saw a report before I got on that said he was – oh, no, he's visiting somebody. He's visiting the Lions. I love Mike Daniels. I did a cover story on Sports Illustrated about him. Little undersized for the Patriots, but I love him. He's a gamer.
Yeah.
You know, I think I expect them to add a veteran linebacker, perhaps, and also a veteran, you know, I think I said, in a tight end, you know, like a Delanie Walker or somebody at some point. So they don't need those rookies to play, but there's no question that now, after the opt-outs, Duggar, Uche, Jennings could be more of a stand-up linebacker now. The tight ends, the offensive linemen, Heron will probably get a look at right tackle. All those become, you know, more in the mix now. And, you know, it's tough to be a rookie and get playing time with the Patriots. It's even tougher when you get 2 weeks of real practice before the season starts.
This is Matt, by the way. I have one final question just because I've been pestering you here. But with the Uche draft pick, he played with Winovich. Does that, like, the same way you said they drafted four Rutgers players, does that play into the Belichick, you know, draft mindset of, you know, these players play together, they know their roles, they know how these other people, you know, train, live, play together. Does that matter at all? As obviously you have an inside information. I'm just curious of, like, I don't know.
I get what you're saying, and I don't discount it. I think that, you know, I know they've taken some Stanford players over the years also. I think that Belichick likes to get – you know, when in doubt, he likes to he likes to take players who have played for coaches that are tough and that, you know, expect guys to be, you know, physical and mentally and physically tough. And I think that, you know, certainly that was the Rutgers guys when Greg Schiano was there. Yep. We've seen some Stanford. We've seen some Ohio State. You know, I think you know, obviously Alabama has been a team with Nick Saban. And I think that, you know, Harbaugh in Michigan and Don Brown, the defensive coordinator there, longtime, you know, mass hole. He's been around forever. Really good coach. I think Belichick respects those guys. But I will say this, and this is partially to defend Rutgers. At least when Rutgers was drafting, at least when Belichick was drafting Rutgers players, Rutgers was actually good in, like, winning bowl games.
Yeah,
Michigan sucks. Like, when was the last time Michigan – can the Patriots draft some players from, like, colleges where they actually win games? That might
Ohio
be
State,
helpful.
Yeah. On the side there. When was the last time they beat Ohio State? Long time. So my last question here. Obviously, the schedule is going to be really tough this year. They're playing NFC West opponents. What's your overall, like, record prediction for the Patriots here? I know, obviously, picking up Cam Newton really – makes a big effect on this team, and then losing guys to the opt-outs obviously hurts this team. So what do you think this record's going to stand here at the end of the day?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was, let's see, before Cam Newton, I was in like the, I think I was like 11-10 win, I think I was like 10-win territory.
What's that?
And I think with Cam, I mean, the opt-outs certainly affect things. I'm about to, this takes a long time for me to sort of analyze the AFC East rosters, and I had done that earlier in the offseason. I'm going to do it again soon, so that'll give me a sense of where I see them with the Bills. You know, I think this Patriots team is capable of winning, you know, 11 games and winning the division again. I mean, I still expect them to find a way to win the division. I hate Josh Allen. I think he's terrible.
Yes, and he's terrible.
I have a hard time seeing the Patriots lose to them.
When was the last time the Bills were good in back-to-back years? I mean, since they lost four in a row, right?
Yeah.
And they gave us Stephon Gilmore. Everybody hated that pick, and now he's the greatest defensive
maybe the best, yeah, at the move.
Outside of maybe Donald Duck, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, here's my last question. So, Super Bowl prediction, you're looking right now. I'll keep it. I mean, Super Bowl, it's really tough to look at right now. We're still in August. But who would you say is the team that the – obviously, probably the Chiefs, right, that the Patriots, like – they're the team to beat. They're the top horse
Chiefs
right
are
now.
Definitely the team to beat. That too.
Yeah, even though I think that, you know, I don't like teams that have won something. I like teams that it's, you know, and I remember reading this in a Bill Walsh book a long time ago when he talked about they had won a Super Bowl and then they stunk the next year, sort of like the Patriots in 2002. And he talked about how much harder it is to climb the mountain once than to climb it again, you know, and that's because, you know, when you haven't won, guys are putting all this extra work in the off season. They're grinding, they're watching more film during the season. Now, after you win a Super Bowl, are those guys doing the same things that they had to do to win a second time? And that's not normally the case. And I think that the Ravens have a lot to prove.
I thought you were going to lean towards Baltimore there.
Yeah, I think they're very talented. I thought they knocked the park out of their draft and will get a lot of bang for their buck out of that draft. And I just think, you know, I blame Harbaugh more than Jackson for the playoff loss last year and his decision making. And I just think, I think they have a lot to prove, that team. And that's, to me, that's dangerous. So I like the Ravens in the AFC right now, but, you know, who knows? Patrick Mahomes is that good that he could carry a team that maybe isn't playing to the same level as a year ago and carry them to another championship.
Outstanding. Well, yep. Greg Bedard here, I really appreciate you coming on and, really sharing your story and your analysis here. Thanks a lot.
Hey, anytime. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good night, buddy.
Well, that was something. Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal, as I thank him through Twitter DMs, I get a nice emoji thumbs up back. Thanks a lot, Bedard.
Yes, thank you, Bedard.
Good guy,
great
local
stuff.
Guy.
Yeah,
is he local? I don't even know. But
as I said, it's like the way he spoke is it's like compared to what he does on public radio and what he can say here, he's just phenomenal. It shows how good he is at what he does and how he's gotten to where he is.
Yeah,
that's
phenomenal at it.
Yeah.
As we throw in the, at the end of the week on a Sunday here, the PGA Championship is wrapping up. Obviously, if you haven't known by now, the Steel and Naz had a nice PGA Championship challenge where we had over 50 entries. You know, you pick your top four guys and combined score wins. I think we were up to the leaderboard was at minus 25 this morning. We're kind of winding down with the PGA Championship right now. We got Morikawa at minus 13 through 17, so it looks like he's going to wrap it up. So anyone have a take on
Who's second?
We got Paul Casey, right?
Oh, I bet him top
two. Yep. Wolf, DeChambeau, minus 10. I'm looking at minus 26. I a lot of people reached out to. I thought this was really a successful type of thing. You know, everyone's looking at it on a Sunday. It's a good time.
And not to promote Steel and Naz, but to promote Steel and Naz, is we're going to do a lot of this type of shit. We're going to do a NFL Survivor League if the NFL season happens.
Yeah, the Masters.
I'm going to put a headhunter fucking name on myself. If you beat me, a random person will. I will give you $200.
Wins one bet. Now he thinks no one can beat him.
$250 fucking dollars.
That's how confident I am. What a fucking idiot. Hit NASCAR one time and it's off the rails.
While we're at it, I might as well bring up the fact that this motherfucker 2 episodes ago said last place gets some money back, and now he's retracting it. Saying you guys are going to your top three.
So what place are you in, Magic?
I believe last.
I hope he's not in last.
Maybe I'm not.
On an absolute streak.
Me and Gutterballs are in last place.
I probably brought up to mention. I said, no, the Survivor, I will say, one person, if you beat me when I win, so nobody will, $250, I'll pick a random winner.
It's ridiculous cocky.
Since we're still in the golf talk, I'm going to get going with my bonehead of the week. This week was Jordan Spieth. Obviously, this guy's just been falling off since the Masters about, 5 years ago where he just, triple bogeyed and has never been back since. So if you took him in our pool this week, you got screwed because first of all, the cut was plus one, I think it was. So anyone plus two or more got shafted. So he makes it, and then Saturday he comes out and he puts up a plus seven.
He was better off not playing.
He was better off just calling it quits.
Yeah, not even showing up that weekend, yeah.
I mean, clearly didn't show up. I played at Widow's Walk yesterday, and I was like a plus 25. Yeah,
coming for you, Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, I'm not walking out here at PGA Championship, so I'm going to the Irish pub and going to have a night. God fuck bless that.
I still think we should get a Steel and Naz golf tournament going. I think that would be fun, because me and fucking Anton can't even get a goddamn tee time with anybody.
Yeah,
We're begging for guys to take us out for a foursome.
I'm not betting any golf.
They won't take us out.
I'll take you guys out one time, but we're only playing 9 holes, because after 9 holes...
See, that's even insulting. Like, what if I fucking outstroke
fuck
you?
Yourself.
It has nothing to do with strokes. It has to do with boredom. After 9 holes, you guys would want to fucking run out of
there. That's not true.
That's 100% true. We should take the
video. As long as enough claws were brought, I think they'd be down.
If you brought me out with Kingsley, I want Kingsley to be your other guy.
You got a shout-out tonight, huh?
Shout-out Kingsley. I heard you were being a little fucking risque on the golf course with the beer girl.
I'm sure not Wig. I want that motherfucking loser.
Ooh.
My cousin. Giant pussy.
Hot take.
I want him. Mm-hmm. I'll beat you. And I don't think I've ever even made a hole.
away from the golf talk, Steele, who's your you got a sloop tonight?
Oh yeah, we're going TJ Warren coming from the clouds, leading the bubble and scoring. He's averaging 34.8 points as of right now. 60% shooting, 55% from three. There's a lot of good NBA talent out there, and I mean, more than James Harden, Giannis, LeBron.
Yeah, this guy's just come on. He must have just been like a workhorse during all this quarantine.
Yeah,
he's grinding away. No, he's always been good. He's from NC State. Really good player out of that.
That Indiana team is tough. And they lost some points,
too.
Is Oladipo back? I haven't watched their games yet.
Oladipo's
not
he's
back in action.
He's not at full strength.
That's a scary team.
He is at full strength. That's a scary team.
It's a really tough team. It's like the Toronto team.
So would you rather play in the Celtics' perspective, would you rather play Indy or would you rather play Philly?
I knew you were going to.
Philly, Philly.
We don't want
Philly
it. We don't care about Philly. We're not even a little afraid of Philly.
No, I have zero.
Simmons just went down too.
I have zero respect for Philly.
I just think Joel Embiid.
I don't give a fuck
against any big man on the Celtics.
We don't have a big man.
No one can guard him. No one.
I get that, but that guy's a loser.
He's a great player. I do agree his persona. He's a loser, but he's a great player.
But he will destroy this.
He will destroy Tice. He will destroy Rob Williams.
He's one
honest
canner.
Don't even put him on the
Thanos
court. That guy's a waste of space.
We're not going to have an Enes Kanter.
We'll get into a little Celtics talk here. So I think they have about two games left in this little eight-game excess regular season. 47-23. Just got an overtime win against Orlando Magic, who are pretty depleted themselves. They're going to be an eight seed.
Not good against the Raptors.
Yeah, that was really that was a showcase game. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, that's the one they play.
They
up
got
for.
They got 31-9 tonight from Gordon Hayward, and if like that continues,
if you
that's
get that
massive.
Hayward, if you get that,
if
Hayward,
he gets hot, yeah, that's
my
that's huge.
My big question is how important is it for Kemba Walker to stay healthy?
He's hurt
massively.
That's
hurt. Massively.
No, it's not.
I'm on the other side. I'm thinking
Kemba's big time.
I think Kemba is big time. I think he's a great player, but when you come down this team, if somehow he's injured, not on the court, it gives guys like Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, obviously Tatum's a key piece here, but it gives them better opportunities to score around the basket. So, it gives Marcus Smart more minutes to get out there and cover the top guard on the other team. I love Kemba Walker, and I think he's going to still do well for this team, whether he's playing or not. But I'm just saying, if you lose him, it's not the end of the world.
I agree to an extent.
Like, where it's like, Nash made like the perfect point of like, yeah, Tatum now gets more touches. You know, Brown gets more
Smart
touches.
Smart's in, yeah.
But it's like, I heard Kemba, who's never been hurt in, seven seasons? I think he's played, 82 games in, five or six
seasons. Yeah, he's been hurt a lot.
Now he's fucking hurt. He looked horrible out there. If he's going to try to fight through his injury, I was watching him the other day. The thing is, I don't want Brad Wanamaker out there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be a Brad Wanamaker hater, but I'm a Brad Wanamaker hater.
You're going to have to go
he
big.
Cannot,
yeah.
His three-point strokes, it's just it's mine.
Well, and then you're making a good point, because that's the counter argument of how important is Kemba Walker. It's like this bench pretty much stinks outside of a couple of guys. So if you lose someone in the starting lineup, it's not going to be good for you guys.
Deep. Yeah. Brad doesn't just play the seven.
Like they
guys.
Say, the green runs deep. Not this year, man. It's not looking like it this year.
But the Celtics are looking better than those Browns.
They are. I will say that.
Dale's beard stays into the year. I'm calling that.
It does not look good for that. No, it does not. But, hey, bounce back.
Can they
Real
beat Giannis? Can they do big time? That's what it's going to come down to. Kawhi left. LeBron James left. Can they get over the top of Giannis and get him to leave too?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. Possible. Or, get rid of Middleton. That's, way more important
he's
for the Celtics.
He's a Celtic killer.
Yeah.
That time when, it was Isaiah's last year here, and we were the clear favorite against them. And I think – I forget who hit the – I think it was Avery Bradley hit, a game-winning three. And then they pass it into Middleton with, 0.4 seconds left. And he nails,
Bang.
A half quarter. That would have – might have been one of the most impressive shots on the team. Send him to overtime, Celtics still win. But, that guy is amazing.
No, that guy
is
unbelievable. Unbelievable shooter. Yeah.
See, the Celtics, those Celtics championship runs, the Posies, the Eddie Houses, the...
Oh, yeah. They're there.
You know what drives me insane is the P.J. Brown respect. He was a fucking old man out there. It drives me fucking insane. Maybe he was a leader. He sucked. He fucking sucked. I don't get it. I do not get it. I'll never understand.
He might have been the bonehead of 2008.
He's the Antan sucks of the week.
But he had the Kelly.
It's back.
Naming it. But
it's 2 weeks in
but
a row.
But he had his Kelly Olynyk shine that game seven against LeBron in 07.
Olynyk at least broke the guy's shoulder.
Most hilarious game
and
of all time. Funniest game
Olynyk
I've ever watched.
Will always, we're kind of changing pace here, but Olynyk will always have a place in Celtics' heart after just dismantling John Wall in the Washington Wizards
literally,
game seven.
Literally.
That was
Love
like,
him.
Who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah,
oh my
hell?
God.
PJ Brown didn't do that. He. Literally, watch YouTube. Literally, watch fucking 5 minutes of YouTube. PJ
Highlights.
Sucks. I sorry, I'm getting ramped up. But
who's worse, people... Dante Hyen or PJ Brown?
Brian Johnson from last week on the Red Sox.
A nice PJ. A nice PJ.
That's on certain people. Poor PJ Brown.
Probably a nice guy. Probably a nice guy.
He probably was. He had a great career.
A decent guy.
He was not a key part of that Celtics fucking run. No. I don't care. Maybe he was a great locker room guy saying chair, ha ha.
Yeah, get the
He is
going.
Not a fucking key piece.
There's a big. I clap it up for locker room guys because that's what we were missing in the second half of the pub game today.
Yeah, we
morale
we
was low. We could have used a good locker room guy. Usually, when I step up,
maybe
and
Mike
fuck.
Steele.
Yeah, should have been that.
Mike Steele could have got things going.
Breaking news. Colin Morikawa is your 2020 PGA champion.
Fuck!
How much money well was there?
Yeah. Time was saying, what was the name of the guy you said earlier? Yeah, he was going to win like 4 Gs.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck.
So, folks, you'll be hearing this on probably Tuesday. So I don't know who's won yet of the PGA challenge here, but
yeah, we'll have to run the numbers.
We'll run it back and
Walker won by how many strokes? Two, three?
Two, I think.
If you got more Walker, you're looking pretty good as long as you didn't have like a Rory or a JT.
Spieth.
Yeah,
goddamn,
Spieth.
Sean O'Callaghan at Morikawa.
You hate to see
Sean,
that.
If Sean wins, he's not getting it.
No, he ain't getting it. Be like, dude, you didn't have enough, dude.
Probably wouldn't even listen to this anyway.
Well, and if no one knows, it is first place 600, second place 200, third place 100.
You can check the facts on that. I'm pretty sure first place gets it all, and last place gets 20. Huh?
You're not in last anymore.
I'm not in last?
No.
If I'm not in last, then yeah, we'll keep it the way that I just said it.
You're not.
I'm not in last, so yeah. First three are looking like they're making some decent,
what a turn of events.
Decent money, yeah. Good shit, turn of events. Me and Gutterballs were getting ready to pull out that card that
go straight
said.
To the Irish pub.
He said last place gets their money back. He likes to do that.
So the last thing I wanted to mention tonight, so me and Anton have an active bet here of I think the over under was 6 of home runs.
I said,
we were on the show here, and I said 6.
I think I said 3.5 or 4.5.
You're well, either way, we'll get into the topic of conversation. Saying. So we're saying 20 plus homers. So two guys have 8 right now. We got Judge and Tatis Jr. Tatis Jr.
Tatis.
Yeah, Tatis.
What's he at?
He's at 8.
He's on an absolute tear.
Judge is at 8.
Great swagger as
that
well.
That means one of my NFBC.
Castellanos, your Cincinnati Reds guy. He's got 7.
I love him.
Mitchie, 4 bags this year. Got 6 home runs. He's 4.
Fuck him. He's not going to play enough games.
Dude, he's getting.
He's not going to play
he's
enough
playing,
games.
He's playing every day.
Okay, yeah, he has 6 home runs.
He's getting 3.5.
He's not going to play enough fucking
we're
games.
We're going to steal for him. He's $3.5 million for this
year. Wait. All right. So what's the number that.
20.
We're trying to get to 20.
20. So they're about 16 games. That's you're right, though. Mitch Moreland only played 10 games.
Anton took the under on that?
He took the under. I said 6.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm way under.
That's going over. That's going over. That's going over.
That was a bad bet by you.
By who? By who? By him?
By Anton.
100 bucks live?
Double it down. Double it down.
100 bucks live?
100 bucks live? Under 20?
I'm under.
Yeah. I'll bet on the over with that.
So
yeah.
7 people?
I want some of that money, too.
7 people have to hit over. 20
7? Oh. You didn't say that.
Yeah, 7. Oh, 6 is a push. Push wins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, push.
Grow up.
Yeah,
grow up.
A push fucking push.
You guys are talking about, yeah, cowardly.
I'll take it back then. I thought
oh,
I had one person.
Bitch.
Also cowardly. Come on, dude.
Fuck it.
It's on record.
Live deal.
There it is.
I'm
witnessing it.
I'm in on the action. Me and Adam are about to win some money. End of season.
Yeah, maybe you could too.
I'll get
in some wrap up language right here. So, big shout out to Emily Powers. Made a great.
Yes. Saw her at the bar last night. Actually.
Nice.
She was very excited.
Yeah, she made a great Steel and Naz logo. You'll be seeing that in the next upcoming week. We're hoping to turn that into merch shirts. I mean, the whole 9 yards, you name it. Anyone else have a take on it?
I saw her last night. She seemed excited. Paul Curtin, her lovely boyfriend.
Fiance.
Okay. Lovely fiance. Hall going nuts.
Yeah,
he was like, my wife's the best graphic designer there is. I also was like, what's up with, why couldn't you draw Anton good? And she was like, I couldn't make him look good. She was like, I couldn't do it. And I was like, he's saying his name's Little Timmy now.
All you had to do was literally draw Jake Gyllenhaal.
On that note, we will wrap up. What do you want, Magic? What do you want?
Nothing.
What do you want?
Nothing. Nothing. I was going to say my Magic Mike minute. I was going to get into mining cryptocurrency, but we'll get into that.
No, do not put it in my ear.
Bruins in six.
Well, like we've already thanked them. Wanted to thank Greg Bedard for coming on the show. And, we'll wrap up. We'll have another nice guest in a couple weeks as we get closer to football season. And obviously everything's in play right now with hockey, basketball, and baseball. Yeah, that's all from Steel and Az, Mass Music Radio's Pioneer Sports Podcast. One love, baby.